This is disc number 21.
"It's all right," Richard told the girl as he gently grasped her shoulders and urged her up. "I'm not going to hurt you. You're safe now." As she came up, he gathered the frightened girl into his arms, embracing her protectively, holding her head to his shoulder when she glanced to the three dead men, as if they still might jump up and snatch her away. She was a slender, lithesome creature, the kind of girl on the brink of being a woman, yet looking as frail as a bird about to leave the nest. Her slender arms came gratefully around Richard as she wept with relief. "The bird a friend of yours?" he asked.
"Loki," she confirmed with a nod. "He watches over me."
"Well, he did a good job tonight."
"I thought you weren't going to come, Master Rawl. I thought it was my fault that I wasn't a good enough priestess for you."
Richard ran a hand down the back of her head. "How did you know I was coming here?"
"The tellings say it is so, but I already waited so long that I thought they might be wrong. I was near to despairing that you would find us not worthy, and then I feared it was my failing."
He surmised that the tellings must mean prophecy of some sort. "You are a priestess, you say?" She nodded as she pulled back to look up at his smile. Richard saw then that her big copper-colored eyes peered out from a dark mask painted in a band around her face. It was a disturbing visage.
"I am the priestess of the bones. You have returned to help me. I am your servant. I am the one meant to cast the dreams."
"Returned?"
"To life. You have come back from the dead."
Richard could only stare. Nikki squatted down beside the girl.
"What do you mean, he returned from the dead?"
The girl pointed behind them at the structure from where they had emerged.
"From the world of the dead, back to we, the living. It says his name there on his tomb."
Richard turned and indeed did see his name carved in the monument. The thing that came immediately to mind was seeing Kalin's name carved in stone, too. Both of them were alive, despite their graves. The girl glanced at Kara and then at Nikki.
"The tellings say that you will come back to life, Lord Rawl, but they did not say that you would bring your spirit familiars."
"I haven't come back from the dead," Richard told her. "I came through the slough, down there in that well." She nodded.
"The well of the dead. The tellings mentioned such mysterious things, but I never knew their meaning."
"Do I call you priestess or by your name?"
"You are Master Rawl. You can call me as it pleases you. My name is Jillian, though. I have had that name my whole life. I'm afraid I have not been a priestess a long time, and so I'm not very good at it, I don't think. My grandfather said that when it is time, it matters not how old I am, but that it is time."
"How about if I call you Jillian, then?" he asked with a smile. She appeared still too frightened to return the smile.
"I would be honored, Master Rawl."
"My name is Richard. I'd like it if you called me Richard." She nodded, still with that look of awe filling her round eyes. Richard didn't know if her awe was at the Master Rawl or a dead man returned to life. "Now look, Jillian, I don't know anything about your tellings yet, but I haven't returned from the dead. I traveled here because I have trouble, and I'm looking for answers."
"You have found trouble, then. You killed three of them. The answer is for you to help me cast the dreams so that we might drive these evil men away. They have driven most of my people into hiding. The older ones are down there."
She pointed down the dark slope.
"They tremble in fear that these men will kill them if they do not find what they seek."
"What are they looking for?" Richard asked.
"I'm not sure. I have been hiding among the spirits of our ancestors. The men must have made someone down there tell them of me because they knew my name when they finally chased me down today. I have been staying out of their grasp for a long time. Today they were hiding where I had cached some food. The men grabbed me and wanted me to show them where the books are."
"These aren't the regular Imperial Order troops," Nikki explained to the frowning look on his face. "They're advanced scouts." Richard glanced at the bodies. "How do you know?"
"Because regular Imperial Order troops would never ask you to put down your weapons and surrender. Only the scouts searching for routes through strange lands and hunting for any information they can uncover would take prisoners. They question people. Those who won't talk are sent back to be tortured. These scouts are the men who first find stashes of books. that are then collected for the emperor to see. Scouts like this find not only the best routes for the troops, but they are meant to find something even more important for the emperor, knowledge, especially that in books. Richard knew the truth of that. Jagang seemed to be an expert on history and what had been done in ancient times. He used that information to great advantage. It seemed like Richard was always trying to catch up with what Jagang already knew. "Have these men found any of the books yet?" Richard asked Jillian. Her copper-colored eyes blinked. "My grandfather has told me about books, but I know of none that are here. The city has been abandoned since ancient times. If there were books, they have long ago been looted along with anything else of value." That was not what Richard had hoped to hear. He had been hoping that maybe there would be something here that would help answer the questions he had. After all, Shota had told him that he must find the place of the bones in the deep nothing. The graveyard all around him certainly was a place of bones. "This place is called the Deep Nothing?" he asked her. Jillian nodded. "It is a vast land where little lives. None but my people can scrape a life from this forbidding place. People have always feared to come here. The bleached bones of those who do venture here are out there, in this place and to the south, before the Great Barrier. The land is called the Deep Nothing." Richard realized that it must be a place much like the wilds in the Midlands. "The Great Barrier?" Kara asked suspiciously. Jillian looked up at the Mord Sith. "The Great Barrier that protects us from the Old World." "This has to be southern Dahara," Kara told him. "That's why I heard stories about Casca when I was a child, because it's in Dahara." Jillian pointed. "This is the place of my ancestors. They were destroyed by those from the Old World back in ancient times. They too were ones who cast dreams." She looked off into the darkness to the south. "But they failed and were destroyed." Richard didn't have time to try to figure it all out. He had enough problems. "Have you ever heard of chain fire?" Jillian frowned. "No. What is chain fire?"
"I don't know."
He tapped a finger against his bottom lip as he thought about what to do next.
"Richard," Jillian said, "you must help me cast the dreams that will drive these men away so that my people will be safe again."
Richard glanced up at Nikki. "Any ideas how I can do such a thing?"
"No,"
she said, "but I can tell you that the rest of the men will sooner or later come looking for these three dead men. These aren't your average Imperial Order soldiers. They may be brutes, but they are the smartest of them. I imagine that casting dreams is something that involves your gift, not an advisable thing to be doing," she added. Richard stood up and put one hand on a hip as he stared off at the dark city on the headland. "Seek what is long buried," he whispered to himself. He turned back to Jillian. "You said that you were a priestess of the bones. I need you to show me everything you know about the bones." Jillian shook her head.
"First, you must help me cast the dreams so that I can chase the strangers away and my grandfather and the rest of our people will be safe."
Richard sighed in frustration. "Look, Jillian, I don't know how to help you cast dreams and I don't have time to figure it out, but I would imagine, as Nikki said, that it involves magic, and I can't use magic, or it very well could call a beast that could kill all of your people. This beast has already killed a lot of my friends who were with me. I need you to show me what you know about what is long buried." Jillian wiped at her tears.
"Those men have my grandfather and others down there. They will kill him. You must save my grandfather first. Besides, he is a teller. He knows more than me."
Richard put a reassuring hand on her shoulder. He could not imagine how he would feel if someone who he thought was powerful refused to help save his grandfather.
"I have an idea," Nikki said. "I'm a sorceress, Jillian. I know all about these men and how they work. I know how to handle them. You help Richard, and while you do that, I'll go down there and see to getting rid of these men. When I'm done, they will no longer be a danger to you or your people."
"If I help Richard, you will help my grandfather?" Nikki smiled.
"I promise."
Jillian looked up at Richard.
"Nikki keeps her word," he told her.
"All right. I will show Richard everything I know about this place while you make those men leave us be."
"Kara," Richard said. Go with Nikki and watch her back.
And who will watch yours?
Richard put a boot on the head of the man he had killed and yanked his knife free. He pointed with the weapon. Loki will watch our backs.
Kara did not look amused. A raven is going to watch your back?
He wiped the blade clean on the man's shirt, then returned the knife to its sheath at his belt.
The priestess of the bones will watch over me. After all, she's been here waiting all this time for me to come here. Nikki is the one who will be in danger. I'd appreciate it if you protected her.
Kara glanced at Nikki as if grasping some greater meaning.
I will protect her for you, Lord Rall.
Chapter 61. As Nikki and Kara started down toward where Jillian said the rest of the Imperial Order soldiers were, Richard went back into his tomb and recovered the smallest of the glass spheres. He slipped it into his pack so that it wouldn't interfere with his night vision, but would be handy if they had to go into any of the buildings of the city. Searching ancient, decaying buildings in the dark was not a prospect he relished. Jillian was like a cat that knew every nook and cranny of the ancient city on the headland. They went through streets that had nearly disappeared under rubble and wreckage of walls long since fallen. Some of the debris had collected weather-borne dust and dirt that had eventually filled it in, making small hills where trees now grew among the buildings. There were a number of buildings Richard didn't want to enter because he could see that they were ready to collapse if the wind blew the wrong way. Others were still in relatively good condition. One of the larger buildings Jillian took him to had arches all along the front that at one time had probably held windows, or maybe had even been open to what seemed an inner courtyard. As Richard walked across the floor, small bits of crumbled mortar crunched underfoot. A mosaic made of tiny square-colored tiles covered the entire floor. The colors were long since faded, but Richard could still make them out well enough to see that the swirling lines of tiles made up a sprawling picture of trees dotting a landscape surrounded by a wall, with paths through places where there were graves.
This building is the entrance to a section of the graveyard, Jillian told him.
Richard frowned as he leaned down a little, studying the picture. There was something odd about it. Moonlight fell across figures in the mosaic that were carrying platters with breads and what looked like meats into the graveyard, while other figures were coming back with empty platters. Richard straightened when he heard a horrifying cry drift up to them from the far distance. Both he and Jillian stood up, stock still, listening. More of the distant faint wails and laments drifted in on the cool night air.
What was that?
Jillian asked in a whisper, her copper-colored eyes wide.
I think Nikki is getting rid of the invaders. Your people will be safe once she is finished. You mean she is hurting them?
Richard could see that such concepts were alien to the girl. These are men who would do terrible things to your people, including your grandfather. If they are left to come back another day, they will kill your people.
She turned and looked back out through the arches. That wouldn't be good. But the dreams would have driven them away.
Did casting dreams save your ancestors? Save the people of this city? She looked back into his eyes.
I guess not. What matters most is that people who value life like you, your grandfather, and your people, are safe to live their lives. Sometimes that means it's necessary to eliminate those who would do you harm.
She swallowed.
Yes, Lord Rall.
He put a hand on her shoulder and smiled. Richard, I am a Lord Rall who wants people to be safe to live as they wish. At last, she smiled. Richard looked back to the mosaic, studying the picture. Do you know what this means, this picture? Finally pulling herself away from the distant, ghastly screams of pain that drifted in from the darkness, she looked down at the picture.
See this wall here? She asked as she pointed. The tellings say that these walls held the graves of the people of the city. This place here is where we are now. This place is the passage to the dead. The tellings say that there were always dead, but only this place to put them within the city walls. The people didn't want their loved ones to be far from them, far from what they considered the sacred place for their ancestors, so they made passages where they could find resting places for them.
Shota's words echoed around in his memory. You must find the place of the bones in the deep nothing. What you seek is long buried. Show me this place, he told Jillian. Take me back there. It was more difficult to reach than he had expected it would be. There was a labyrinth of passages and rooms back through the building. Some of it went between walls that were open to the stars, only to re-enter the dark depths of the building.
This is the way of the dead, Jillian explained.
The deceased were brought in through here. It is said that it was made this way in the hopes that the souls of the dead would be confused by the passages, and these new spirits would not be able to wander back out. Instead, confined in this place and unable to come back among the living, they would then go on to be where they belonged in the spirit world. They at last came back, out into the night. The crescent moon was rising above the ancient city of Casca. Loki circled above and called down to his friend. She waved back. The graveyard spread out before him, was good-sized, but seemed inadequate for a city. Richard walked with Jillian on the path through the crowded graves. Gnarled trees stood in places. In the moonlight, it was a peaceful place with wildflowers spread across the rising and falling contour of the land. Where are the passages you spoke of? He asked her.
I'm sorry, Richard, but I don't know. The tellings speak of them, but do not say how to find them.
Richard searched the graveyard, Jillian at his side, as the moon rose higher in the sky and he could not find any evidence of passages. It all looked like any graveyard he had ever seen. Some of the ground was mounded with a number of markers. The stones for each grave were crowded close. Some yet stood, while others had long since fallen to lie flat on the ground or be grown over. Richard was running out of time. He couldn't stay down in Casca forever listening to the cicadas sing. This was getting him nowhere. He needed to look for answers where he was apt to find them. This ancient place did not appear to be the place. At the People's Palace in Dahara, there would be valuable books that Jigang had not yet been able to loot. It was more likely that he would find useful information there than in an empty graveyard. He sat down on the side of a small hillock beneath an olive tree to consider what he might do. Do you know of any other place where there would be these passages that were mentioned in the tellings? Jillian's mouth twisted as she considered.
I'm sorry, but no. When it is safe, we can go down and talk to my grandfather. He knows many things, much more than me.
Richard didn't know how much time he had to devote to listening to her grandfather's stories, either. Loki fluttered down to the ground nearby to feast on the newly emerging cicadas. After the 17 years they'd lived underground, more of them were emerging, only to be pecked up by the raven. Richard recalled a prophecy Nathan had read to him. It had mentioned the cicadas. He wondered why. It had said something about when the cicadas awakened, the final and deciding battle was upon them. The world, it said, was at the brink of darkness. Brink of darkness. Richard glanced down at the cicadas as they emerged. He watched them coming up out of the ground. As he watched, he realized that they were all coming up through a space in a gravestone laying face down against the rise of ground. Loki had noticed, too, and stood eating them. That's odd, he said to himself.
What's odd?
Well, look there. The cicadas aren't coming up through the dirt. They're coming up from under that stone. Richard knelt down and pushed his fingers down into the space. It seemed hollow underneath. Loki cocked his head as he watched. Richard lifted, grunting with the effort. The stone began to lift. As it came up, he realized that it was hinged on the left. It finally gave way and opened. Richard stared down into the darkness. It wasn't a grave marker. It had been a stone cap to a passageway. He immediately pulled the glass sphere out of his pack. As it began to glow, he held it down in the dark maw. Jillian gasped.
It's a stairway.
Come on, but be careful. The stairs were stone, irregular, and narrow. The leading edge of each was sway-backed and rounded from countless feet making the journey. The passage was lined with blocks of stone, making a clear path down deep into the ground. The steps came to a landing and turned right. After another long run, they turned left and went deeper. When they finally reached the bottom, the passage opened into wider corridors that were carved from the solid but soft rock of the ground itself.
Richard held the glowing globe out in one hand and Jillian's hand in his other as he bent a little to clear the low ceiling as he led them deeper. It wasn't long before they encountered an intersection. "Do your tellings say anything about finding our way down here?" She shook her head. "How about all those mazes you learned? Do you think they will do you any good down here?"
"I don't know. I never knew this place existed."
Richard let out a breath as he looked down each of the two passages. "All right, I'll just start going in deeper. If you think you recognize anything or any of the routes, let me know." After she agreed, they started down the left fork. To each side of the narrow passageway, they began finding niches that had been carved into the walls. Inside each lay the remains of a body. In places, the niches were stacked 3 or 5 high. Some had 2 bodies, probably a husband and wife. Around some of the recesses, ancient paintings still remained. The artwork was vines in some places, people with food in others, and in some places, simple designs. From the different styles and the varying quality of the art, Richard guessed that it must have been done by loved ones for a member of their family who had died. The narrow passageway opened up into a chamber with 10 openings tunneling off in various directions. Richard picked one and started down it. It, too, opened into broader spaces, with a warren of branches. The elevation changed from time to time, going down deeper and occasionally going up a bit. They soon began encountering the bones. There were rooms with stacks of similar bones in niches. Skulls had been carefully fit into one niche, leg bones all stacked and out in another, arm bones in another yet. Great stone bins carved in the side walls held smaller bones all laid in neatly. As Richard and Jillian moved through vault after vault, they saw walls of skulls that had to number in the tens of thousands. Knowing that he was seeing only one random passageway, Richard could not imagine how many people had to be interred in the catacombs. Even as startling, and even horrifying, was to see so many of the dead. Each of their bones looked to have been placed reverently. None were simply cast into a hole or a corner. Each had been carefully placed, as if each had been a valued life. For what had to be well over an hour, they made their way through the maze of tunnels. Each section was different. Some were wide, some narrow, some with rooms to each side. After a time, Richard realized that each spot must have been carved out of the soft rock to make space for a family. That was why the niches seemed to fill every available space in such a haphazard fashion. And then they came to a section of the passage that had partially collapsed. A huge section of stone had toppled, and rubble had fallen in around it. Richard stopped and looked at the tangle of stone. "I guess this is as far as we go." Jillian squatted down, peering under the stone block, lying at an angle across the passageway.
"I can see a way under here."
She turned to Richard. Her copper-colored eyes looked frightening, staring out from the black mask painted across her face.
"I'm smaller. Do you want me to go have a quick look?"
Richard held the glowing sphere down in the opening to light it for her. "All right, but I don't want you to keep going if you think it looks dangerous. There are thousands of tunnels down here, so there are plenty of others to look in."
"But this is the one the Lord Rawl found. It must be important."
"I'm just a man, Jillian. I'm not some wise spirit returned from the world of the dead."
"If you say so, Richard."
At least she smiled when she said it. Jillian disappeared into the angular hole like a bird going through a thorn bush.
"Lord Rawl," came her echoing voice. "There are books in here."
"Books?" he called into the hole.
"Yes, a lot of books. It's dark, but it looks like a big room with books."
"I'm coming in," he said. He had to take his pack off and push it out ahead as he crawled in. It turned out not to be as worrisome as he had feared, and he was soon through. When he stood on the other side, he realized that the huge stone block lying at an angle across the passage had once been a door. It looked like it had been designed to slide out of a slot cut into the side of the wall, but at some point the massive door had broken along the fault in the stone, and it had toppled over. As Richard inspected the mess, He brushed the dust away and saw one of the metal plates that activated a shield. The idea that these books had been behind a shield made his heart race faster. He turned back to the room. The warm light from the glowing sphere did indeed show a chamber full of books. The room ran at odd angles, seemingly without reason. Richard and Jillian walked along the passageway, looking at all the books. Most of the shelves were carved into the solid rock, the way the resting places for the dead had been cut out to make room. Richard held the sphere up as he started scanning the shelves. "Listen," he said to Jillian, "I'm looking for something specific. Chainfire. It might be a book. You start on one side, and I'll take the other. Make sure you look at each book's title." Jillian nodded. "If it's in here, we will find it." The ancient library was discouragingly huge. As they inched along and rounded a corner, they encountered a chamber lined with aisles of shelves. The search was slow going. They had to work in the same area so that they could both see. For several hours, they painstakingly made their way through the room. Partway through, they encountered side chambers, smaller than the main room, but still full of books. From time to time, they each had to blow dust off some of the spines. Richard was tired and frustrated by the time they came to a spot where he saw another of the metal plates. He pressed the flat of his hand against it, and the stone wall in front of them began to move. The door wasn't big, and it quickly pivoted open into blackness. He hoped that the shields keyed off what they recognized of his gift and didn't actually work by making his power answer some silent, unfelt call. He'd not like to be down in the catacombs and have the beast materialize. Richard stuck the light into the darkness and saw a small room with books. There was also a table that had long ago collapsed because some of the ceiling had come down on top of it. Jillian, deep in concentration, ran a finger along the spines of the books as she read each, while Richard took 5 strides across the room to the far wall. He saw another metal plate there and pressed his hand to it. Slowly, another narrow door in the stone began pivoting away from him into the darkness. Richard crouched lower as he stepped into the doorway and held the light partway in. "Master, you wish to travel?" a voice echoed. He was staring at light reflecting back off the Slif's silver face. It was the well room where they had come in. The doorway was on the opposite side of the steps from where they had found the first metal plate that had opened the ceiling. They had just spent most of the night going around in a circle, ending up right where they had started.
"Richard," Jillian said, "look at this."
Richard turned back around and came face to face with the red leather cover of a book she was holding up. It said, "Chainfire." Richard was so stunned that he couldn't talk. Jillian, grinning with discovery, came into the Slif's room with him as he backed in, taking the book from her hands. He felt as if he were somewhere else watching himself hold the book named Chainfire. Chapter 62.
"Richard?"
It was Nikki's voice. Still startled to actually have found Chainfire, he walked to the steps and looked up. Both Nikki and Kara, silhouetted by dawn light, were peering down at him.
"I found it.
I mean, Jillian found it."
"How did you get down there?"
Nikki asked as Richard and Jillian started up the steps.
"We just looked in there and you weren't there."
"Jillian?"
It was a man's voice.
"Grandfather!"
Jillian raced the rest of the way up the steps and flew into an old man's arms. Richard climbed the steps after her. Nikki was sitting on the top step. "What's going on?"
"This is Jillian's grandfather,"
Nikki said, lifting out a hand in introduction. "He is the teller of these people, the keeper of the old knowledge."
"Glad to meet you,"
Richard said, embracing the old gentleman's hand. "You have a wonderful granddaughter. She just helped me out immensely."
"You would have found it if I hadn't seen it first,"
Jillian said, grinning. Richard smiled back. He turned to Nikki. "What happened to Jigang's men?" Nikki shrugged.
"Night fog."
As Jillian went with her grandfather to greet Loki on a nearby wall, Richard spoke confidentially to Nikki and Kara.
"Fog?"
"Yes,"
Nikki interlaced her fingers around a knee.
Some kind of strange smoky fog drifted past them and made them go blind.
Not just blind, Kara said with obvious delight, but burst their eyes right in their sockets. It was a bloody mess. I quite enjoyed it.
Richard frowned at Nikki, wanting an explanation.
They're scouts, she said. I know these men, and they know me. I didn't want them seeing me. More than that, though, I wanted them to be useless to Jigang, the ones who live, anyway.
From what Jillian's grandfather tells me, he doubts that many of them will make it back to Jigang's forces, but I made sure they were near enough to their horses so that their animals will carry them back. I want the ones who live through the ordeal to be able to report only the horror of the fog coming down from the hills, that they were blinded in a strange, forbidding, and haunted land. Such news will send a fright through his men. Raping, pillaging, and slaughtering the helpless is all perfectly entertaining for Jigang's army. But they rather don't like things like this. Dying for the Creator in a grand battle and going to their reward in the afterlife is one thing. Being taken by something they can't see coming out of the darkness and ending up helpless in this way is quite another matter. I expect the Jigang will decide to skirt this land rather than allow some unknown out here to give his men a fright that could change their minds about fighting for the glory of the Creator and the Imperial Order. That means they will have to continue on south for a good distance. It will add time to their journey before they can finally swing around and come up into Dahara.
Richard nodded thoughtfully. Very good, Nikki, very good. She beamed.
What do you have there?
Chain fire. He moved up on the steps to sit between Nikki and Kara. It's a book. He hesitated in opening the cover. In case this is some kind of prophecy or something, I'd just as soon you looked at it first.
Concern settled in her exquisite features. Of course, Richard, give it here.
Richard handed her the book and stood. He didn't want to risk glancing at it, and too late discovering that he shouldn't have, only to discover the beast about to tear into them. Especially not now, not when he was so close to getting answers. Nikki was already scanning the book, Kara looking over her shoulder.
It makes no sense, Kara announced as she read from Chainfire.
Richard didn't think that Nikki shared that opinion. Her face was draining of color.
Dear spirits, she whispered to herself.
As she kept reading, not saying anything to them, Richard sat on a rise of ground to the side, under an olive tree. There was a vine growing around the trunk. He reached out to idly pluck a leaf from the vine. He stopped, his hand inches from the dusky, variegated leaves. Icy goose flesh prickled up his arms. He knew what that vine was. From the Book of Counted Shadows, the book that his father had made him commit to memory before they destroyed it, the words flooded into his mind. And when the three boxes of Ordin are put into play, the snake vine shall grow.
What's the matter?
Jillian whispered to him as she leaned close.
You look like you've seen a spirit.
Have you ever seen this plant growing here, where your people live?
No, I don't believe I have.
She's right. Jillian's grandfather said in a puzzled voice. I've lived in these parts all my life. I don't recall seeing that vine before, except for a spell almost 3 years back, I believe it was. That's right. 3 years this coming autumn. Then it died away. Haven't seen it since.
Richard didn't see any pods on the newly sprouted vine. He reached out and carefully plucked a sprig.
Richard, this is an incredibly dangerous book. Nikki said in a gravely troubled voice.
She was preoccupied, still reading and not paying any attention to the rest of them talking.
This is beyond dangerous.
She was reading as she spoke.
I'm only in the beginning, but this is... I don't even know how to begin.
Richard rose to his feet, holding the sprig of the vine out, staring at it.
We have to go, he said, right now.
Something in the tone of his voice made Kara and even Nikki look up.
Lord Rawl, what is it? Kara asked. You look like you just saw the ghost of your father, Nikki said.
No, this is worse, Richard told her, finally looking up. I understand. I know what's going on. He ran to the steps, down into his tomb.
Sliff, we need to travel.
But Richard, you have come to help me cast the dreams so that the evil people will not come here.
Look, I have to leave right now.
Lord Rawl has already helped us as much as he can for now, her grandfather said as he put an arm around her slender shoulders. If he can, he will return to us.
That's right, Richard said. If I can, I'll return. Thank you, Jillian, for helping me. You can't begin to imagine what you have done this day. Tell your people to stay away from that vine.
Richard, Nikki said, what's gotten into you?
He seized Nikki's dress at her shoulder and Kara's arm. We have to get to the People's Palace now.
Why? What's happening? What did you find?
Richard showed her the sprig of vine before stuffing it in a pocket and grabbing her arm again and forcing her down the steps.
This is a snake vine. It only grows when the boxes of Ordin have been put in play.
But the boxes of Ordin are safe in the palace, Kara protested.
They're not safe any longer. Those sisters have put the magic of Ordin in play.
Sliff, we need to travel to the People's Palace.
Come, we will travel.
Nikki was still fighting him as he pulled her along. Richard, I don't see what this has to do with your dream of this woman. Richard slapped the metal plate, starting the sealing of the tomb closing.
Goodbye, Jillian. Thank you. I will return someday.
As she waved, he snatched up his bow and quiver. He turned to Nikki.
They need Kaelin. She's the last living confessor. They put the boxes of Ordin in play. They need the book I have memorized. The first thing it says is, verification of the truth of the words of the Book of Counted Shadows, if spoken by another, rather than read by the one who commands the boxes, can only be ensured by the use of a confessor.
The ceiling finished closing. In the distance, Richard could hear Jillian call,
Goodbye, Richard. Safe journey.
Richard, this is crazy. It's just,
now is not the time to argue with me. She knew by his tone of voice that he meant it. He climbed up on the wall and hoisted both women up.
Here, wait, Nikki said as she opened the pack. You had better keep this safe.
She stuffed chain fire down inside and tied the flap down tight.
Any idea what chain fire is about? He asked.
Her blue eyes gazed into his.
From what I was able to tell from the tiny bit I saw in the beginning, it's a theoretical formula for conjuring things that have the potential to unravel existence.
Unravel existence? Kara asked. What does that mean?
I'm not exactly sure, but it seems to be a discussion of a theory of a specific magic that, if ever initiated, could potentially destroy the world of life.
Why in the world would they need that? Richard asked. They have the magic of Ordin now.
Nikki didn't answer. She didn't believe his theory. It involved Kaelin.
Sliff, now, please, take us to the People's Palace.
The silver arms swept them up.
Come, we will travel.
Just before they plunged into the silvery froth, Nikki and Kara each seized one of his hands. Chapter 63. Nikki had hardly gotten her bearings, hardly recognized that they were in a marble room, hardly let the sliff out of her lungs and pulled in a desperate gasp of air when Richard was already pulling her up over the wall by the hand. Despite everything, she was still able, in some dim part of her mind, to thrill at holding his hand, for whatever reason. She had thought that while in the sliff traveling to the People's Palace, that she would be able to give thought to Richard's strange new twist of finding a bit of a vine and leaping to the conclusion that the boxes of Ordin were in play, all in an attempt to prove that Kaelin was real. The room they were in was shielded. Richard pulled her and Kara through the powerful shield. They ran up a marble hall and out a double silver door with a lake embossed into the metal.
I know this place, Kara said. I know where we are.
Good. Richard said. Then you lead the way, and hurry.
There were times when Nikki almost wished that she had gone along with Zed, Anne, and Nathan's plan to purge him of his memory of Kaelin. Except for one thing. She had tried the theory on one of Jigang's men back in Casca. She had tried to use subtractive magic to eliminate the man's memory of the Emperor. It sounded simple enough. She had done just as the three had wanted Nikki to do to Richard. There had only been one problem. It had killed the man.
killed him in a most horrifying fashion. When she thought about how she had almost done that to Richard, how for a time she had let them talk her into it, and had been committed to doing it, she had gotten so weak and dizzy that she had to sit down on the ground next to the dead soldier. Kara had thought Nikki had been about to pass out. The idea of what she had almost done left her shaking for an hour. "Here," Kara said as she led them upstairs that emptied into a broad corridor with parts of the roof glassed. The light flooding in was reddish, so it was either almost sunset or just after dawn. Nikki didn't know which. It was a disorienting feeling not to know if it was day or night. The halls were filled with people. Many of them stopped to stare at the three people running along the corridor. Guards also noticed and came running, hands to weapons, until they saw Kara in her red leather outfit. Many of the people recognized Richard and dropped to a knee, bowing as he ran past. He didn't slow to acknowledge them. They went up a dizzying array of passages, over bridges, along balconies, between columns, and through rooms. Intermittently, they ran upstairs. Occasionally, Kara took them through service halls, undoubtedly as shortcuts. Nikki took note of how magnificent the palace was, how remarkably beautiful. The patterned stone floors were laid with rare precision. There were grand statues, none as remarkable as the statue Richard had carved, but grand nonetheless. She saw a tapestry that was larger than any she had seen in her life. It depicted a sprawling battle and must have had several hundred horses in it. "This way," Kara said, pointing down a hall as she rushed toward it. As they came around the corner, Kara crossed over to the other side of the passageway as she ran down it. Nikki, pulled along by her hand, would have liked to have discussed a number of things, to have asked some important and pointed questions, but it was all she could do to get her breath as she ran. Running was not something she really ever did until she met Richard. Kara slid to slow down as she came to a pair of carved mahogany doors. Nikki was revolted to see the snakes carved into them. Without pause, Richard seized one of the door handles, a bronze skull, and yanked the door open. Inside the quiet, carpeted room, four guards immediately sprang to block Richard's path. They saw Kara and looked at Richard again, uncertain.
"Lord Rawl?" one asked.
"That's right," Kara snapped. "Now get out of the way." The men immediately pulled back, each putting a fist to their hearts. "Has anything happened recently?" Richard asked as he caught his breath.
"Happened?"
"Intruders. Has anyone slipped in this way?" The man snorted a laugh.
"Hardly, Lord Rawl. We'd know if that happened, and we'd not allow it."
Richard nodded his thanks and raced to the marble stairs, nearly pulling Nikki's arm out of the socket in the process. As they ran up the steps, Nikki thought that her legs might simply quit. Her muscles were so exhausted from the long run up through the palace that she could hardly make them go on. But she had to, for Richard. At the top of the stairs, soldiers were running toward them, crossbows loaded with red-fletched arrows, and at the ready. They didn't know it was the Lord Rawl. They thought someone was trying to get into the restricted area. Nikki hoped that someone got hold of their senses before one of the men got careless. But by their reactions, Nikki realized that these men were highly trained and not prone to shooting arrows before they were sure of their target. Lucky for them, because she would have been faster. "Commander General Trimac?" Richard asked an officer, pushing his way through the ring of steel that had surrounded them. The man stiffened and clapped a fist to his heart.
"Lord Rawl!"
He spotted the moored Sith.
"Kara!"
Kara nodded in greeting. Richard clasped arms with the man. "General, someone has gotten in here. They've taken the boxes in the Garden of Life." The general was momentarily struck speechless.
"What? Lord Rawl, that's not possible. You have to be mistaken. No one could get past us without our knowing it. It's been peaceful as can be up here for ages. Why, we've only had one visitor."
"Visitor? Who?"
"The prelate, Verna. It was a while back. She was in the palace checking on something about books of magic, she said. She said that as long as she was here, she wanted to have a look to make sure the boxes were safe."
"So you let her go in there?" The general looked a bit indignant. A long scar stood out white when his face went red.
"No, Lord Rawl, I wouldn't let her go in there."
What we ended up doing was opening the door so she could look in to see that everything was safe.
Look in?
That's right. We surrounded her with men, all pointing these special arrows at her. Arrows Nathan Rawl found for us that will stop even the gifted. We had her ringed in steel. The poor woman looked like a pincushion about to happen. Men all around nodded at the general's words. She looked in the garden and said she was relieved to see that everything was fine. I took a look myself and saw the three black boxes sitting on the stone slab across the room, but I never let the woman set foot beyond the doors, I swear.
Richard heaved a sigh. And that's it? No one else has opened those doors?
No, Lord Rawl. No one else has even been up here but my men. No one. We don't let anyone even use these halls around the Garden of Life. As you may recall, you were rather insistent about it the last time you were here.
Richard nodded, thinking. He looked up.
Well, let's go have a look.
The men, all jangling with weapons and armor, followed the surprised visitors down the polished granite hall until they reached two huge gold-covered doors. Without waiting for someone else to do it, Richard pulled one of the heavy doors open and started into the room. The soldiers paused at the doors. This was apparently sacred ground, a sanctuary for the master of the palace alone, and unless invited by the Lord Rawl, none of them would enter. Richard didn't invite them, as he rushed off on his own. Despite how tired she was, Nikki hurried after him as he made his way down a path among the beds of flowers. Overhead, through a glass roof, she could see that the sky had turned to a darker purple, so she knew it was night rather than dawn. Just like Richard, Nikki paid little attention to the vine-covered walls or the trees or all the other things growing all around. The garden was a magnificent place, to be sure, but her gaze was riveted on the stone altar she saw in the distance. She didn't see any of the three boxes that were supposed to be there. There was something else standing on the slab of granite, but she couldn't tell what it was. By the way Richard's chest was heaving, he did know what was standing there. They crossed a ring of grass and the open dirt. In the dirt, Richard stopped cold in mid-stride and stared down at the ground.
Lord Rawl? Kara asked. What is it?
Her tracks, he whispered. I recognize them. These aren't covered by magic. She was here alone. He gestured to the dirt. Two sets. She was in here twice. He looked back at the grass, following what he could see that they couldn't. She was on her knees there in the grass. He took off and ran the rest of the way to the stone altar. Nikki and Kara sprang into a run to keep up with him. When they reached the slab of granite, Nikki knew at last what it was standing there all alone. It was the statue of the woman that had been carved in marble in Liberty Square and Altar Rang. The original statue Richard had told them he had carved. The statue, he said, belonged to Kaelin. Nikki could see that there were bloody handprints all over it. Richard picked up the carved wooden figure in trembling hands and drew it to his breast. Gasping back a sob, Nikki thought that he might fall to the ground, but he didn't. When he had held it for a moment, he turned to them, tears running down his face. He held out to Kara and Nikki the statue of the proud figure, her head thrown back, her hands fisted at her sides. This is the statue I carved for Kaelin. This is spirit. This is the statue I told you could not be in Altar Rang because she had it with her. If they copied this statue in stone down in Altar Rang in the old world, then how did it get here? Nikki stared at it, her eyes wide, trying to reconcile what she was seeing. She couldn't comprehend the contradiction. She remembered Richard trying to understand what he had seen at the gravesite where the Mother Confessor was buried. Now she knew how he had felt.
Richard, I don't understand how that could have gotten here.
Kaelin left it here. She left it here for me to find. She took the boxes of Ordin for the sisters. Don't you get it? Don't you at last see the truth standing before you? Unable to say more, he pulled the statue back to his chest as if it were the most precious treasure in the world. In that moment, in the pain trembling through him, Nikki wondered what it would be like to have him love her that much.
at the same time, despite her confusion, despite sadness for what she was seeing, for the pain he was so obviously in, she felt joy. Joy that Richard had someone who meant that much to him. Someone who could make him feel that way, even if she was imaginary. Nikki was not yet convinced that she wasn't.
"Do you understand now?" he asked. "Do you two get it now?"
Kara, looking as stunned as Nikki felt, shook her head. "No, Lord Rawl, I don't understand." He lifted the small statue.
"No one remembers her. She probably walked right past those men and they forgot her. Just like you forgot all the thousands of times you've seen her. She's all alone in the hands of those four sisters, and they made her come in here and get the boxes. Do you see the blood all over it? Her blood. You should understand that. Can you imagine how she feels all alone, forgotten by everyone? She left this probably hoping someone would see it and know she exists."
He thrust it at Kara, then at Nikki.
"Look at it! It's covered in blood! There's blood on the altar, there's blood on the floor. There are her footprints. How do you think the boxes are gone and this is here? She was here."
The indoor garden was dead silent. Nikki was so confused she didn't know what to believe. She knew what she was seeing, but it didn't seem possible.
"Do you believe me now?"
Richard asked them both. Kara swallowed.
"Lord Rawl, I believe what you were saying, but I still don't remember her."
When his raptor gaze slid to Nikki, she too swallowed at the power of that look.
"Richard, I don't know what is going on. What you say is certainly powerful evidence, but like Kara says, I still don't remember her. I'm sorry, but I can't lie to you and tell you what you want to hear just to make you happy. I'm telling you the truth. I still don't know what you're talking about."
"I know you don't," he said with sudden, quiet, remarkable sympathy. "It's what I've been telling you. Something terrible is happening. No one remembers her. Anything that could cause such an event is undoubtedly powerful and extremely dangerous conjuring, able to be engendered only by the most powerful people who have command of both sides of the gift, magic so dangerous that it would be hidden in a book buried in a catacomb behind shields, where the wizards who put it there hope no one would ever find it."
"Chain fire," Nikki breathed.
"But from the brief bit I saw of it, this somehow has the power to undo the world of life."
"What do the sisters care?" Richard asked in a bitter voice. "They've already put the boxes of Ordin in play. It is their intent to end life on behalf of the Keeper of the Dead. You should understand that better than anyone."
Nikki put a hand to her forehead.
"Dear spirits, I think you may be right."
She couldn't feel her fingertips. She was tingling all over with dread.
"From the little bit I read, chain fire sounds like it might be something along the lines of what Zed, Anne, and Nathan wanted me to do to you. Use subtractive magic to make you forget Kaelin. If what you say is true, then, in a way, that might be what the sisters did. They made everyone else forget her."
Nikki looked up into his gray eyes, eyes she could lose herself in. She felt tears of fright run down her cheeks.
"Richard, I tried that."
"What are you talking about?"
"I tried what they wanted me to do to you. I tried it on one of Jagang's men back at Casca. Tried to make him forget Jagang. It was fatal. What if that's what chain fire does to everyone?"
Richard heaved an angry breath.
"Come on."
He marched out of the garden to a general and his guards waiting out in the polished granite hallway, huddled around the entrance to the Garden of Life.
"Lord Rawl," the general said, "I don't see the boxes anymore. They've been stolen."
Jaws of men standing all around dropped in stunned astonishment. General Trimac's eyes went wide.
"Stolen? But who could have stolen them?"
Richard held up the statue and waggled it in front of the man.
"My wife."
General Trimac looked like he didn't know whether to scream in fury or commit suicide on the spot. He instead rubbed a hand back and forth on his mouth as he thought through everything he'd heard and apparently tried to put it together with any other information he had.
He looked up at Richard with the kind of intent look that few men other than generals could muster.
I get reports all the time, Lord Rawl. I insist that I see all reports. You never can tell what bit of information you might learn that could turn out to be helpful. General Myford sends me reports as well. Since he's now close by, I get them within hours. Soon he and the troops will be moving south, and it will take longer, but for now, I get them fresh.
I'm listening.
Well, I don't know if it means anything, but the latest report I got early this morning said that they came across a woman, an old woman, who had been stabbed by a sword. She's in bad shape, according to the report. I don't know why he sent me a report on such a thing, but General Myford is a pretty smart fellow, and I have to think that there was just something bloody odd about it for him to want me to know.
How close is he? Richard asked.
The army, I mean.
How close? The general shrugged.
By horse? Ride halfway hard and they're not more than an hour or two away. Then get me some horses, immediately.
General Trimac clapped a fist over his heart at the same time as he signaled a couple men forward.
Run on ahead and get some horses ready for the Lord Rawl.
He looked at Richard, then glanced at Kara and Nicky.
3 horses?
Yes, 3, Richard confirmed.
And an escort of the first file to show him the way and provide protection.
The two men nodded and took off at a dead run for the stairs.
Lord Rawl, I don't know what to say. I will, of course, resign.
Don't be silly. This isn't something you could have done anything about. It was deception by magic. It's my fault for letting this happen. I'm the Lord Rawl. I'm supposed to be the magic against magic.
Nicky could only think that he had been trying to be, but no one would believe him.
Without sparing any time to rest, Richard, Kara, and Nicky, escorted by a company of the palace guards, rushed through the grand, wide corridors of Richard's ancestral home. People along their route scattered out of the way of the wedge of guards coming down the halls. Behind the guards, Kara marched out in front of Richard. Nicky rushed along at his side. As they made their way down a smaller corridor with fewer people, Richard slowed and then stopped. The guards stopped far enough away to be handy, but to give him his privacy. As everyone waited, Richard gazed down a side passageway. Kara looked uncomfortable. Quarters for Mord Sith, Kara explained to Nicky in answer to the unspoken question in her eyes.
Denna's room was down that hall.
Richard gestured the other way. Your room was down there, Kara.
Kara blinked.
How do you know that?
He looked at her for a moment, his expression unreadable.
Kara, I remember being there.
Kara turned as red as her leather outfit.
You remember?
Richard nodded.
You know?
She whispered, panic coming into her eyes.
Kara, he said gently,
of course I know.
Her eyes brimmed with tears.
How did you know?
He gestured to her right wrist. When I've touched your Ajeel, it hurts. An Ajeel only hurts when a person touches it if it was used to train them, or if the Mord Sith intends it to hurt. She closed her eyes.
Lord Rawl, I'm sorry.
It was a long time ago, when you were a different person, and I was the enemy of your Lord Rawl. Things change, Kara.
Are you sure I've changed enough?
Others made you into who you were. You made yourself into what you have become, he smiled. Remember when the beast hurt you and I healed you?
How could I ever forget it?
Then you know how I feel.
She smiled at that. Richard's brow drew together.
Touch.
His eyes lit up with sudden recognition.
The sword.
What?
Nicky asked.
The sword of truth.
That morning, when I was asleep, I think the sisters cast a spell to make me sleep more soundly, so they could take Kaelin. But I put my hand on the sword. I was touching the sword of truth when they took her and made everyone forget Kaelin.
The sword protected me from that magic. That's why I remember her. The sword of truth was a countermeasure to what they did.
Richard started out again. Come on, we need to get to the encampment and see who that injured woman is.
Baffled, Nicky followed after him.
Chapter 64. Nicky was surprised by the encampment. She was so used to being among Jigang's army that she hadn't really given any thought to how different these men might be,
It made sense, of course, but she had just never given it any thought. Even in the dark, there was still the light of all the fires, and she expected to be the center of morbid attention, with men calling out the filthiest things they could think of in an attempt to shock her, or humiliate her, or frighten her. Men in the order encampment always hooted and hollered at her, made obscene gestures, and laughed uproariously as she passed among them. These men, to be sure, looked her way. Nikki expected that it was a rare experience to see a woman like her riding into their camp. But they only looked. A glance, an admiring gaze, a smile here and there, with a bow of the head in greeting, was the most she got. It could be that she was riding in beside the Lord Rawl and a Mord Sith in red leather, but Nikki didn't think so. These men were different. They were expected to conduct themselves with respect. Everywhere when men saw Richard, they were eager to clap a fist to their hearts in salute as they stood in pride or trotted along beside his horse for a time. They looked overjoyed to see him riding into their camp, to see their Lord Rawl among them again. The camp was also more orderly as well. That it was dry was a help. There were few things worse than an army camp in the wet. In this camp, the animals were confined to areas where they wouldn't accidentally create trouble. Wagons were out of the main route through the camp. There actually were deliberate routes through the camp. The men looked weary from the long march, but their tents were set up in a rather systematic manner, not the haphazard every-man-for-himself method the Imperial Order employed. The fires were small and were only what was needed, not the drunken revelry of men dancing, singing, and brawling around the bonfires. The other big difference was that there were not any torture tents set up. The Order always had an active area set aside for torture. A steady stream of people flowed in for questioning, and an equal number of corpses flowed out. The constant screams from victims made for a noisy camp. That was the other thing. It was rather quiet. Men were finishing with meals and bedding down for the night. It was a quiet time. In the Order's encampment, there wasn't any time that was quiet. "There," one of the men escorting them said as he lifted an arm to point out the command tents in the darkness. A big blonde-headed officer came out of one of the tents when he heard horses nearby. He had undoubtedly already been alerted that the Lord Rawl was on his way. Richard swung down off the saddle and stopped the man from going to his knees to do a devotion. "General Meifert, it's good to see you again, but we don't have time for that." He bowed his head. "As you wish, Lord Rawl." Nikki watched the general's blue eyes glance to Kara as she came up beside Richard. He smoothed back his blonde hair. "Mistress Kara, General."
This is the end of disc number 21. Please insert disc number 22.